Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
Okay, we're ready to go. So, I need to... Professor Hall's been talking about blogs.
We need to
follow up on blogs here. I've got a sign-up sheet for you. I'm still working on the who's who sheet for this class. And I want you to make sure I have all your existing information is correct. Add your craft here to the right if it's not already there. And also add your blog's login name. The name that you've used to log in to the blog. And the ones I think I know I've already written in. So if I've gotten it correct, just leave it alone. Otherwise, fix it for me, please. Please sign your blog posts either with your own first name or with your character's name. But, you know, put it in the title or put it at the bottom. Sign it so we know who we're reading. I'm only using the first names because I don't know, some of you all might not want to be, have your full name out on the internet that way. So you'll notice it in our chart where it's Matt H. and J, just so that we don't have ourselves identified to the whole world. So there's one person that had not posted, but I guess... they've now got that straightened out, so I won't go over that. Please bring your computer to class on Tuesday for sure. Let's go over the writing assignment. Could you get our syllabus up on the board?
I know you just got
Bumbleberry to Michael Delving. I'm going to map. No, let's draw this on. I'm going to return to the Shire.
Thursday, 13 September.
I'll leave that.
There it is.
Okay. So here's the assignment. I posted the assignment. I'll read it out loud for you, and we'll discuss it for a bit. In Gamer Theory 2.0, Mackenzie Work remarks, "You observe that world after world, cave after cave, what prevails is the same agon, the same digital logic of one versus the other, ending in victory or defeat. Agony rules. Everything has value only when ranked against something else. Everyone has value only when ranked against someone else. The real world appears as a video, Arcadia, divided into many and varied games. Work is a rat race. Politics is a horse race. The economy is a casino. Games are no longer a pastime outside or alongside of life. They are now the very form of life and death and time itself." From Lexia 006. Now, this is a passage we partially discussed in class, but I want you to use it as the basis of your paper. And here's the assignment. Write a 5-page essay arguing for or against Work's thesis. Now, it's very important that you take a stand and that you present an argument. I know you've all done argument papers. That's going to be the key element of this assignment, is that you take a position and demonstrate it persuasively. So this is a persuasive essay, an argumentative essay. And I'm going to give you some specific clues for how to proceed. The assignment continues. Draw evidence for your position both from games you've played, any games, Madden, sports games, Lotro, WoW, any games. You need to have at least one piece of evidence for either the truth or the falsehood of Work's position from a game you've played, and evidence drawn from experiences you've had in life. For example, the sports teams you've played on, the school rat race, summer jobs, or any other dimension of your life that you think either fits what work says or disproves what work says. In the course of your essay, elucidate work's thesis by quoting and analyzing at least two other passages from his work which relate to one aspect or another of the passage I've quoted from Lexia 06. Which means that you're going to need to probably reread the whole chapter and find other passages in it that amplify what he's saying here, or complicate it, or even contradict it. You know, you could say his position is completely incoherent. I don't agree with it at all. And in fact, he even offers evidence that disproves his own thesis. You could do that. And that, in fact, I can think of ways that I might take that position. So that would be a very creative thing to do. But in other words, you don't just analyze this one passage I've quoted. You deepen your analysis of this one passage I've quoted by finding at least two other parts of his essay. And again, when you find these, I want you to analyze them, not just say, here's another passage, quote it, and then move on. You know, you want to say, here's another passage, here's why I think it's germane to my position, here's how it relates to the former quote, here's the subtlety that he's, you know, the complex argument he's making. You really unpack it for your audience. So this is a complex essay assignment. I think it'll be a challenge for you. I hope you'll rise to the challenge. By Tuesday, you need to have filed it correctly in, what's the name? Oak. In
the Dropbox.
The Dropbox in Oak. And I have instructions for how to do it. Failure is not an option. You must succeed at this by Tuesday so that you come into class here and can have access in class to your essay on your computer, and so that Matt Hall and I can have access to your essay in our Dropboxes. So that's going to be something that you need to achieve by Tuesday. And then in class on Tuesday, we will work on our essays further. You'll be swapping them with one another, peer reviewing. How many of you all have done peer reviewing in high school? Almost all of you, some of you. So we'll explain the process. It'll be a lot easier, I think, with computers rather than pen and paper. We'll have that set up for you on Tuesday. And then later next week, I'm going to have appointments with each of you individually to go over your essay before you rewrite it for the following week. So you're going to have several cracks at this paper topic. That's why I gave you one that I hope will be very challenging for you. But it's the kind of complex writing that you need to expect to do in college for the rest of your years here. It doesn't matter whether you're an econ major or a pre-med major, you're going to have writing assignments that require you to present arguments at a very high level and defend them with great skill. And in fact, as Professor Hall can testify, there is no walk of life today after graduation that does not require extensive writing ability. The better you are as a writer, the more you're going to succeed in life. My wife, who is a doctor, spends half her time writing. And lawyers, you know, they live by the word.
Well, let me reiterate that. Bankers, I was an investment banker for a decade. You write and you write and you write your pitch books to your client, your correspondence. Every syllable you put down on paper is considered something very valuable as to whether or not someone trusts you as a valuable counterparty in their financial services organization. That's just as important in engineering or economics or any other walk of life. Working, running this organization at Vanderbilt, very important. Every expense that I have, every staff person that I have in, under employment, we have to justify, report, discuss. If you're a police officer, a tremendous amount of narrative writing. So whatever walk of life you find yourself in, you will never be underserved if you work to make your writing excellent.
Any questions about the assignment? If you have questions, email us, text message us, get on the game and talk to us about it. Don't arrive on Tuesday saying, I couldn't figure out this. Yes?
I actually have one question. Are we going to be graded on Tuesday on whether we just get the essay in, or are we actually going to be graded on the content then, too?
Tuesday's free.
Okay.
If you don't get the essay in successfully on Tuesday, your class participation grade will take a hit. But that's just a default yes, no. You know, I expect everybody to succeed on that. But no, you will not be graded on Tuesday for what you've written. You will, nor on what you present to me at our conference. This is, writing and revising is a process. All experienced writers do multiple drafts of things that they compose. And so it would be actually against the pedagogic aims of the course to grade you on the early stages. You know, we want to encourage you to write and then rewrite. So the grade will be based on the paper you turn in at the final paper due date. So is everybody signed up here and made whatever corrections need to be made? Excellent. Any other questions? Thank you for that, Greg. No other questions about the paper?
Not yet.
What?
Not yet.
Okay, good. So today's topic, the topic of today's class, what's the difference between a virtual world, an imaginary world, and a fictional world? Any thoughts about that? Yeah.
A virtual world is one that, like, actually exists but has fictional representations of real things in them, like an actual physical thing. Imaginary doesn't actually have to exist. It's kind of just in your mind. And then fictional, I guess, would just be an imaginary world with a lot of history.
That's a good start. That's a really good start. Mike?
I was going to say, a virtual world has kind of been laid out for you sometimes. It's often, it's going to exist whether you think about it or not oftentimes. Whereas a fictional world, you have to make the most of it. Like, you have to expand upon it in your own mind.
Excellent. So how would the fictional world differ from the imaginary world?
From the virtual world?
No, the imaginary world.
Oh. Fictional world can sometimes have some background information.
It's written down.
Yeah, like you said. Yeah.
Say it again.
It's written down. Print.
The fictional world's definitely written down. That's a start. Does somebody want to be a note taker for today's class?
Jeff's already done his time.
Jeff has done his time. He's done it well. Okay, Wesley. So, can you recall what your classmates Chris and Mike have said about virtual worlds?
Virtual worlds. Yeah, I just reiterate. What about virtual worlds?
Chris said again.
I said it was it's like a physical representation of something that doesn't actually exist.
Well, not necessarily a physical. That's all you said the first time.
Like,
it's a
virtual representation of
something that doesn't actually exist. Okay. And Mike,
what?
An imaginary world is in your mind. How many people had imaginary worlds when they were young? Let the record show that all but two people raised their hands. What was yours like? Is anybody going to confess about their imaginary world when they were a kid? Yeah, Seth,
awesome.
Brave man.
A lot of war
and guns, okay. Was it based on actual gun wars?
No, I was just like running around.
In your mind, though.
A stick or something.
In your mind, yes.
Not a whole lot of rules. I think I got to do whatever I want.
Not a lot of rules. That's interesting. Not a lot of rules, since we've already been talking about rules as a basis of games. So imaginary worlds would differ from games in that respect.
Or that you set your own rules.
Or you set your own rules, exactly. Yes, Matt.
There's a whole bunch of me saving the world by taking out the trash.
Right. But I do think a lot of me saving the world is very characteristic of imaginary worlds, at least as experienced by the population of this class, male population of this class. I think that's very characteristic of the childhood imaginary worlds of boys. Anything else? There's a lot of fantasy to it. You make up your own rules.
Well, I was going to say mine changed a lot, like the setting or who I was or whatever.
As you grew up?
Or day to day.
Right. So, I want to give you an example of a famous writer who lived in an imaginary world when she was a child. That is Emily and Charlotte Bronte. What did they write?
Wuthering Heights.
Which was which? Wuthering Heights is Emily Bronte. Jane Eyre is Charlotte Bronte. And together, they had an elaborate fantasy world when they were children, before they became writers, called Gondol. Sounds almost like Gondor. I've often wondered if Tolkien was making a covert reference to the Brontes' imaginary world that they lived in. So that they said, you know, many people have speculated that their preparation to becoming a writer was this shared imaginary world that they had as children. And we know about it because they actually then did write it down in little tiny books that they composed when they were children, 8 years old, 10 years old, that kind of thing. Can people name fictional worlds that have large-scale reality to them that exist over several books? Can you think of any of them? Yes.
This is not exactly a literary masterpiece, but the Animorphs series.
Okay,
that's
Animorphs.
Quite the extensive series.
Yes.
Dragon Riders of Pern.
Boy, I love those books.
The Forgotten Realms.
I don't know the Forgotten Realms.
Aria Salvatore. Classic.
Okay. Yes.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Discworld. Terry Pratchett.
Yes. Good. Terry Pratchett. Discworld. So what you've named are all fantasy fictional worlds, which works perfectly well with this course because we're studying fantasy fictional worlds, both in Tolkien's writing and in this game. Anybody ever read a novel that had a realistic fictional world that persisted over several volumes and that began to take on such a complexity and wholeness that people referred to it almost as a place? In high school, you'd have to have read them in high school English class, I suspect.
What about The Matrix?
The Matrix is a...
Because it was so real. But.
It is, and it's certainly dealing with some of those issues as a theme in the movie, The Matrix. Anybody ever read any Faulkner? Zero Faulkner readers. Oh, yes. What have you read?
What was it called?
It was awful.
Deep impression.
I mean...
Faulkner, of course, is one of the greatest American writers of the 20th century, and the majority of his books are set in a fictional county in Mississippi.
I used to know it.
Okay. What's that? Where they carry the mother? Is that that?
As I lay dying.
Yeah, I've read that like four times. It's
four
terrible.
Times. So this is we're not here to evaluate Faulkner at this moment, but to discuss his fictional worlds. He had this county called Yaknapatawpha County, which was based on the county that he grew up in Mississippi. But it became so real to people who loved his fiction that it seemed to exist out there, much like a virtual world seems to exist out there. Anybody ever read a Thomas Hardy novel?
Oh, The Hardy Boys?
No, not the Hardy Boys. I hope you were just teasing me. Nobody's read Thomas Hardy in high school. You didn't have to read Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, Tess of the D'Urbervilles is set in a county, like most of his novels are set in a county called Wessex. So for fictional, would you write Hardy and Wessex and Faulkner and Yaknapatawpha? It's spelled just like it sounds.
Right. Just make it up if you don't.
We'll correct it before we record it for our audiences. And another famous one is Anthony Trollope's Barsetshire.
What's Faulkner's series?
Faulkner's called Yaknapatawpha. Don't worry about it. We'll write it in later. Write Hardy and Wessex for us. So I wanted to just get those before you as examples that the kind of imaginary, fictional, and virtual worlds that we're studying have a long lineage.
I'm not sure if Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment would really fall in there, because, I mean, it's kind of like... it's fictional, but like it's in real place of like real Russia, like his life, how he lived his life.
Exactly.
But the
difference is that I'm drawing attention to as worlds that novelists return to over a series of books, as opposed to worlds that they create in a single book. In fact, every really good novel creates a world for you. Every good novel creates a fictional world for you. So. It's these novels that create fictional worlds that persist the way this virtual realm persists that I wanted us to talk about. Now, today we're going to go on a tour of the Shire, which Professor Hall is going to lead. And in fact, now that he's queued up his map for you, why don't you show them where you're going to run them?
Well, we're going to be in Michael Delving, first of all. So if you haven't landed there, those who have their PCs, try to get yourself through swift travel to the horse in Michael Delving.
Yeah. I don't even know how to swift travel.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's like...
Just get to your horse and get to the horse and wherever you're at and selling them or Ariador.
There's horses.
Yeah. Ito, I know you're close by. So.
I mean, I've tried jumping on them before, but it didn't do anything.
Oh, yeah, this is
They come in pipes.
It's okay. It'll instantaneously migrate you to that realm.
Yeah, I'll just let myself
will
die.
We be reimbursed?
We don't make it on the store.
No, you will not. You'll have to go grind something. I'll
take the virtual tour then. Via the screen.
I have you on follow.
You want to go to the methyl stage? Or are we trying to get north of Hobbiton?
Let's go to Frodo's house. And so that's what he's going to show you. So those are our players. If you're not there, you can just watch. So
there's somebody out there.
Who's that? Yeah, Sculptor.
Oh, I'm going to be there momentarily.
Okay.
We'll have a couple more.
So that's Bumbleberry jumping to the horse. So what I want you to do is notice the fictional landscape, the virtual landscape that you're running through. We're going to have a discussion about the role of set. Oh, there's Candy. We're going to have a discussion about the role of setting in creating a sense of reality.
Don't mind my key mapping here. Please ignore that man behind the curtain right now as you continue your discussion.
How close are you all to leaving?
We're going to give them 2 minutes to get over there.
Okay, 2 minutes to get over there.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question while we wait for 2 minutes. Give us a fresh screen up there, if you can.
Insert. Blank page.
Hello. And right across the top, three headings: novel, movie, game. So on the far left, novel. You're not going to have room to get all three on there, I bet. Use film, it's shorter than movie.
Is that movie?
to pursue there.
Whoa. Got a five horse icon.
I have a Shire's Bit.
Yeah, the Shire's Bit.
Good horse.
It's like we're super spaced out.
Like
no. Stable
master,
really?
Doesn't take us
multiple
days to cross it.
Though.
Nope.
Which
one?
Like a Gondomon or Sedgman?
I think it's time to leave.
Okay.
If the people are there or not.
Okay, off we
so
go.
The train's going.
We're going to Hobbiton first stop.
Hobbiton first stop.
Can you follow?
Yes. Do follow on Bumble. There he is. Am I still on you? Yes,
Deuce.
I am.
You can right click on Bumbleberry, and then there'll be a follow.
Do /follow.
You can do /follow as well. So I just
we get out of the.
He's a jumping guy.
So you're a bounder now. That's good. So Bumbleberry has become a bounder.
I'm so huge. A bounder is like a
someone who
protector.
Bounds.
Yes, we're about seeing like a bounding.
Bounding. That's did, bounding.
Don't you remember in today's reading they talked about the need for bounders to supplement the sheriff force? So Bumbleberry has become a bounder.
I'm a partial bounder.
They're a big deal in this hour in the
show. So they're running through our fictional landscape. And for those of you that are running along who haven't been here before, this will, of course, light up your map for these areas.
Bumbleberry's taking quite a turn, so get ready, guys.
You're fast.
Hobbits are naturally
Hobbits
fast.
Roll.
It just makes you look fast because they have a shorter stride.
Exactly.
But yeah, it does look like they're just
and doors
flying.
And
Chris,
sprinters.
Don't disillusion us.
Wait,
now you've taken them across country. They're going to get aggro from...
Uh-oh.
Those wolves are crazy.
Watch out for... I would just keep rolling.
You forget that you are an uber level 13.
Whatever you do, don't look back. You'll turn into a pillar of salt.
Oh, and I had you follow, and now I've lost you. I think you should have gone by.
You're right.
Dive.
You know,
would you stop?
This wasn't a part of the plan. This is extemporaneous running to Hobbiton.
You gotta be able to improvise.
Where's Bumbleberry?
Bumbleberry's right here.
Wait, they have the game makers. Do they have the license for just the
books?
Right?
Okay, wait. I right click on them. Yeah, you can, or you can just click them and /follow.
Do you know if the game makers have the license to the game too?
If you go out to mmodb.com, there's an interview with the CEO. There's a couple of them on Lotro. It talks about the entire licensing arrangement, movie and book, and there's elements of each.
Really?
Yeah.
Really.
Okay, we're off again.
Are we all assembled? We are heading north to Weymouth, would be our first destination.
Right.
All right, off we go. And then here's an interesting map thing.
So do you recall Weymouth from today's reading?
How do you spell it?
Weymouth.
Not like meat as in the flesh, but... Sure, my gaggle is with me. We continue to Hobbiton.
Yeah, go not only through Hobbiton, but to Frodo's house. Go up to Baggy. Bilbo's house that becomes Frodo. Meanwhile, why don't we multitask and see if we can watch a scene from the movie? While Professor Hall runs your characters up there. So we'll see if this can be, if we can achieve this. This is going to be a scene in Frodo's, at Frodo's house.
No one any more visitors well within those distant relations.
And what of our very old friends?
Watch the set of the house.
Bill,
Come on, come in! Welcome, welcome. Tea? Or maybe something a little stronger. I've got a few bottles of the old Wynyard left. 1296. Very good year. Almost as old as I am. It was made out by my father. What name is the old one?
Just tea, thank you.
What function is this scene playing in the novel? I mean, the movie?
Shows habits are small.
Racial differences.
Small dwelling.
Racial differences. Height. What else, Steph?
Small dwellings.
Small dwellings. More.
Kind of like the bright brown moon.
Lightens the moon.
Shows hospitality of hobbits.
Hospitality of hobbits. Very good. Yes. Matt, I didn't hear what you said. Did you say something else?
I was just kind of reflecting on the personality of the race, and they kind of like to burrow.
They kind of like to burrow, safety, enclosure. They like close spaces.
Foreshadowing.
What's being foreshadowed?
You haven't aged today. He was like,
I'm sorry.
When he was like, you haven't aged today, and he was like, kind of that weird look on his face.
Exactly. Yeah. So a scene like this is having to play multiple roles early in the movie.
We're all assembled in Hobbiton, but I need some geographical assistance from Hobbiton.
Just there's a good picture of the house. Maybe I'll take over.
There you go.
Move up to that again. Okay. Switcher followed a
Cheerable.
Where are they?
Where's Cheerable?
I'm the small one.
Where's everybody waiting?
He's the lead one.
We're in Hobbiton right now.
Hobbiton's that past day.
Okay. Okay, we're gonna run up here. Are you all on my
board?
Here I am. I'm going toward the bridge.
Bywater Bridge.
I'm gonna get Candy advise you to join a fellowship. That's a good idea. So cross the bridge. We're going to run up this hill here. I want to see where I am. You all still with me? So you notice we've run up this hill. And we're going to hang a left here.
I think Rumbleberry is impatient with
you. Ito is way up ahead. What's he doing up there?
He's rolling.
We're at the party tree.
We're at the party tree. So I just want you to see the party tree. You get a good sense of where that is. There's the party tent. I want you to look closely at all the settings. Now we're going to go up one more level. I'm not going to go back on the road. I'm going to go over it here if you want to follow me.
Good place for cooking over there.
So there's a nice apple orchard right there.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm hanging back for you here.
Does Lutcher have whole thing set up?
Okay.
You got me?
Who's with it? Everybody with me?
We're almost there.
Okay. I just got the hobbit.
My guy was following and he ran into a mountain.
You're going to get hung up on the follow as you wake up someday. Wesley, what was your question?
Does Lutcher have Vint?
Yes, it has, in fact, automatic chat, in-game chat.
If you're in a fellowship.
If you're in a fellowship.
We also have teamspeak.vanderbilt.edu for
for our purposes when we use.
Okay,
it.
Here we are at the front door of with Lobelia Sackfield Baggins out front. Who is she?
She's the cousin. Person who bought the house. The lady. What? She was somehow related.
Interesting thing in her will. In the will.
Oh, wow. So why is she there?
Silver spoon.
Frodo sold the place to her.
So let's all go in, shall we?
Let's see what it looks like. She took the point, but she took the spoons as well.
So was that way back to Frodo's wife?
Because I've got serious lag. Okay. Well, there's the picture in the movie, and here you are. In the game, go explore.
It's not as cluttered.
This is the very entrance, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So run around and explore.
This is a nice house.
Yeah. Wait,
there's no chandelier.
No chandelier?
There.
I don't think it's as round. Like in the other scenes, all the roofs in there seem really like.
Oh my goodness, it's a green dragon.
In fact, I hope we can go to the green dragon shortly.
It's in one of the libraries. What
was the name of the
Smog.
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 SMAU.
So this is where.
The furniture.
Utah's got.
Infinite energy.
Yeah.
No, I just
think
that
that's
huge.
Yeah, that we're trying to equip
something. Okay, you've seen enough of this house, so let's talk about it for a minute. What differences do you notice?
It's not as detailed.
Sure. Not as detailed in game.
It's a lot wider because for someone to be playing this, you know, you would come right down on the character and you wouldn't be able to see anything if it were just the circle. Oh. So it's a lot wider so that your screen can see the whole room. And
it's a lot taller.
Yeah.
Like twice or three times as high.
Yeah. Men can stand up in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy's got.
And so, do you think that some of that has to do with point of view? So there's point of view in a video game, you know, because they know your camera of your character has a point of view, and so they're adjusting the landscape to make it appropriate for point of view. What else? What other details do seem different?
I don't think it's as round.
It's not as round.
It's pretty boxy. It's a lot less cluttered.
Okay. Now, I have some larger points I want to make about this setting, but before we do, I want to go to another place and get a second piece of evidence in front of you. Let's go to the Green Dragon Inn. Professor Hall, can you find the Green Dragon Inn from here?
More than likely not. I'm geographically impaired because of some key mapping problems.
Because it's down the hill to Hobbiton, then off
to
east
to Hobbiton
to Bywater.
I just may take a leap of faith here.
Yeah, I found the quickest way back when your low level was just jumping off the cliff, respawning.
See you at the party tree.
Oh my God! So did you take off without the class?
I see a lot of the class on me.
Okay.
So.
We probably ought to have a race for extra credit. First one into the Green Dragon.
We're at the party tree right now.
Where is that?
South and back in.
Where's that?
I'm a novice in Bible.
Yeah. Are you really? Stay there.
Stay out.
That's where we're coming.
You win. You win the race.
You win. Right. Extra credit. Okay. I'm taking off. I'm not waiting for you.
I know where it is.
Let's roll.
I'm going to get there.
That's cruise.
That's cruise.
What, yeah.
Tito.
They'll have to get to Bywater itself.
You can't jump that hedge.
I just jumped the hedge.
Did you really? Oh, wow. Single bound. Look out.
I can jump the hedge.
Hobbits can swim.
Hobbits can definitely swim. It is weird. Hobbits are not supposed to like water.
Except for the
okay, and what about the jumping? I mean, you can jump like four times your height.
Now, he can play some basketball.
Oh, that's normal, actually. He's never seen one in the movie jump.
It's Michael Baggins.
What? Do I know where I'm
going? Well, remember when he, in the movie, when he tries to jump across the bridge, when the bridge is coming up?
Yeah.
He goes like 2 feet, and then here, he can...
Are you going to the Green Dragon?
We're going to the Green Dragon. Right.
In Bywater.
In Bywater. Jump.
He's trying to be like an athletic trainer.
You're bad at falling onto it.
No, I'm about to get there.
This is the green.
Yeah. Isn't somebody this gang of a run buff?
There's a.
Yeah, I found it.
You know, I know what you're talking about, like minstrels in Dark Age Camelot.
Yeah. Or even like druids and everything.
Yes.
Is the gaffer in here?
Do what?
A run buff? I'm just surprised there wasn't one.
A pace or something?
That just makes you run faster.
Where's the one?
What's the inn?
Probably
the
review.
The Green Dragon.
See if we can lap Cheerable.
We need to queue up cheesy race music.
Oh, yeah, we can do that later. Oh, look at that. Yes.
There we go.
Stop jumping over fences.
Somebody put up Scatman by Scatman.
Look out, I'm going to get this. I'm going to get the screenshot.
Runnerberry in the lead.
Yeah, everybody's lined up in front of the Green Dragon.
There it is, in front of the Green Dragon.
In front of the Green Dragon. Turn around, face away from the Green Dragon.
Everybody get
a screenshot.
It's time for the class photo in front of the Green Dragon.
Wait a second, I'm going to be there in like 10 seconds. I've been following
we're waiting,
you for
we're
forever.
Okay, don't stand in front of small hobbits.
You know, small hobbits.
Oh, I found everyone. Right.
Yeah, someone's getting way up. All right, are we assembled enough?
There I am.
There's
okay.
Cheerio.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, there's some sitting down, some flexing, there's some smoking. Everybody's got their they're all showing. What a bunch of hams for the camera.
Okay, do you have their screenshot yet?
I've got a couple. So
okay,
we're good.
Everybody, turn around and go into the Green Dragon.
But I like dancing.
It's pretty amazing that the server can handle us all in the, going in at once. Into
it's
the
this fantastic drive. Vanderbilt network.
It is pretty incredible.
Vanderbilt does
okay.
Really fascinating.
There we are in the Green Dragon. Park your character and open your book. We're going to talk about literature for a minute. Stay up there would be good for you. Thank you, Wesley. Everybody get out their book. When you in literature classes, you bring your computer, of course. Who would think of coming to literature class without the computer? But also bring your book. It's a kind of quaint, old-fashioned touch. So share with the person next to you that doesn't have a book. I'd like you to go to the chapter called The Shadow of the Past, chapter 2. Yep. And I'd like you to go to the second, third, sort of fourth section, the one that begins, little of the, all of this, of course, reached the ears of ordinary hobbits. Do you see that?
Wait, In the Shadow of the Past?
It's the chapter
like
In the Shadow of the Past.
After.
It's about two pages in. Three pages in.
Little of all, wait, what was it?
Third section in yours?
Little of all of this.
Little of all of this, of course, reached the ears of ordinary hobbits.
I mean, 47, I don't know if you have to say.
What's the chapter?
It's chapter 2.
So chapter 2.
Section
3. Two. Shadow of the Past.
I got mine for 47 cents. How much is yours?
I got that.
This is a scene that goes on for about a page and a half. Nothing happens in it. It's not memorable, but it plays a really interesting role in the novel and is kind of fun and charming little scene. Do you recall the scene in the Green Dragon? from your reading last night? So you do. You, it was memorable enough. It's where Sam Gamgee is sitting there talking with Ted Sandyman, and Sam is saying, you know, strange things are happening, and Ted Sandyman is jibing back at him, saying, nah, I don't believe you. I don't want to read the whole part of it, but I want you to remind yourself of it. Let's skim down a little bit. They're laughing at him, and say, the passage begins, "All right," said Sam, laughing with the rest, "but what about these tree men, these giants, as you call them? They do say that one bigger than a tree was seen up way beyond in the North Moors not long back." Who's they? Asked the skeptic, Ted Sandyman. "My cousin Hal, for one. He works for Mr. Boffin at Overhill and goes up to the North Farthing for the hunting. He saw one." And so what does Ted Sandyman reply? Remember it from your reading.
He says he saw one. He doesn't believe him.
He doesn't believe him. He says yeah. You know, he couldn't have, there's no elm trees. You know, and they go on just debating in the quiet night in the pub about whether the Bagginses are peculiar people. And let's go to the end of the scene right before the break. "Oh, they're both cracked," said Ted. You see that passage? Mm-hmm. "Leastways, old Bilbo was cracked, and Frodo's cracky. If that's where you get your news from, you'll never want for moonshine. Well, friends, I'm off home. Your good health." He drained his mug and went out noisily. Sam sat silent and said no more. He had a good deal to think about. For one thing, there was a lot to do up in the Bag End Garden, and he would have a busy day tomorrow if the weather cleared. The grass was growing fast, but Sam had more on his mind than gardening. After a while, he sighed and got up and went out. It was early April, and the sky now was clearing after heavy rains. The sun was down, and a cool, pale evening was quietly fading into the night. He walked home under the early stars through Hobbiton and up the hill, whistling softly and thoughtfully. What's this scene doing in the novel? What function does it play? Why did Yes?
I think it was showing, like, it's reinforcing the whole, like, feeling safe in your area. He's not really, he hasn't been exposed to the whole quest thing yet, so he's basically, what Tolkien is doing is describing how he feels in his own home environment.
Yes, Mike?
Also, just more fleshing out the world.
Very important. Both of those comments are exactly on mark. But fleshing out the world, and as you know, we're talking about how media build the sense of worlds. Wesley, since he's been helping us. But you've been helping us, okay. And then you've got to start writing down these comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to say how it really shows how illusioned the Hobbits were. You know, they had such an idea of how isolated they were.
Right.
You know, they had no idea what's going on the outside.
They lived in their own little fantasy world, illusory world, yes.
I think it provides a good contrast for the High Elf scene afterwards when Frodo says that Sam doesn't seem like his old self, and Sam's talking about, you know, he feels like he needs to do something, and sort of everything's changed, except I think Sam, what it sets up here is that Sam is sort of a quiet and maybe not the smartest guy, but he thinks about things even if he doesn't really get them.
Especially that last paragraph where you can see it sort of sinking in. How do we know that he's reflecting on something? It says he sat silent and said no more, and it says he had a good deal to think about. But how does Tolkien make you realize he's really pausing and reflecting? What little touch there at the end of that passage? It's something you register almost automatically, so it's hard to identify it because you process it automatically as a reader of fiction. And so I'm drawing your attention to a technique that the author uses that works without you even being aware of it. What is it that makes you know that he's reflecting, that he's becoming more thoughtful and serious there?
Softly and thoughtful?
softly and thoughtfully. Where is that?
The last line, last four words.
Definitely. What sets those last four words up? Yes.
So it will just sit silently.
Sit silently. And then what?
Says no more.
Says no more. It's the nature description.
That's romance right there. It's nature reflecting thought.
Exactly. I mean, everything you said is correct. You know, obviously, Sam sat silent and said no more. Could a film do that? Could a film? Yeah. Yes, it could. Sit silently. Yeah. Then how would a film register that he's thinking?
Like
zoom in.
Up like this.
Very good. Zoom in. You know, look up. You know, there's any, you know, they could kind of puff on his pipe or do any number of things. But often a zoom is cinematic code for character is thinking. Novelistic code. Sometimes novels will just give you the interior thoughts of the character, but often they won't. And instead, it gives you this kind of poetic passage of nature description. Tolkien loves nature description. You'll see a lot of it. And I want to draw your attention to the fact that he uses it for different purposes. That he's here using it to capture a mood. What is the mood? It said thoughtfully, softly, but what mood is going on here?
It's like, I kind of think it's like a calm down period before like the next...
Calm before the storm?
Yeah.
Questioning. A little bit of anxiety, perhaps, is there? Worry? Pardon me? It's
kind of like he knows something's getting ready to happen.
That's right.
The kind of the sixth sense.
That's right. He knows. He's a little foreboding, I guess would probably be one of the best words for the mood here, is foreboding. And so the very calm early April sky of the nature description is a foil for the mood of foreboding that Sam is feeling. Now, we're going to read into the next passage very carefully, because I want you to see how Tolkien handles time. Creating a virtual world, clearly setting contributes to a virtual world, and setting contributes to a fictional world, and setting contributes to a filmic world. Again, thinking about how each of those three media registers and uses setting differently. We won't try and lay out all the ways right now, but if you have any observation, I'll pause for it. Anybody have an observation about how these different media use setting?
As far as like importance to each, or
just how the setting creates the world that you're dwelling in.
Try to stay in theme.
Right, I saw that. How does setting in a game or a movie or a novel?
You missed the beer drinking scene.
The beer drinking scene. I saw the kiss.
I know our pipes are touching each other. But usually in a game, your setting is used to give you a certain idea of where your general area is supposed to be, and to you know, give you a little bit of a path. You know, it's a wide path, but it's still a little bit of a path with which to work with, so you know generally where to go. So you're not completely lost within the entire world. You have some sort of direction.
Anyone want to elaborate on that? I mean, we've just run through a game space. Even our leader got a little disoriented inside the game space.
And outside.
It's a game space that is mapped, triply mapped for us by the novels we've read, by the map that the game provides, and by the movie. And yet he's still got a little loss. And games also play with that sense of setting in space by not letting you have map details until your character has personally explored the space. Have you noticed that? That's a very common feature. So one thing setting does in a game that it doesn't do in a novel is that it provides a space for your character.
Yes. Music does that too. The music in the game. I noticed as you like switch towns, music changes. Like, yeah. Well, now because we're in the Shire and Hobbit Town, we have like a happy like.
But especially kind of, in movies.
Yeah,
and it works that way in movies. It can work that way in novels, but you have to provide your own music.
Yeah, when you're reading a book, you kind of have a song. I sometimes have a little song playing in my head that would go along the way.
I do that all the time, too. Yeah. Let's notice the control of time in a novel. Right here in this passage. It was just at this time that Gandalf reappeared after his long absence. For 3 years after the party, he had been away. Then he paid Frodo a brief visit, and after taking a good look at him, he went off again. During the next year or two, he had turned up fairly often, coming unexpectedly after dusk and going off without warning before sunrise. He would not discuss his own business and journeys, and seemed chiefly interested in small news about Frodo's health and doings. Then suddenly his visits had ceased. It was over 9 years since Frodo had seen or heard of him, and he had begun to think that the wizard would never return and had given up all interest in hobbits. But that evening, as Sam was walking home and twilight was fading, there came the once familiar tap on the study window.
No, 12 years
passed.
One paragraph.
One paragraph. I like how Frodo went from like 30 to 50 in a few pages.
We call this pacing.
Yeah.
It's a term you might want to write down and remember for literary criticism, pacing. A novelist can expand time, dilate time, which means... or can rush over time, so that what was the pacing of the scene in The Green Dragon? Slow, fast.
That, very fast.
Seemed
slower.
Very slow.
Sorry.
I mean, we spent 1.5 pages on a conversation in which nothing happened in a pub.
Seems
yeah,
slow.
It doesn't even compare to like what comes up next between Frodo and Gandalf.
That's right.
When Gandalf shows him the ring, and
it seems more
starts
of a,
talking about the little markings on.
Yeah, but I didn't want to use that scene because that's a significant scene.
Okay.
You know, that's a scene that plays a crucial role in the drama of the novel. Here is a scene, a very expansive, dilated scene. That doesn't play any crucial role is all about world building. That scene is wholly devoted to setting the mood, establishing the world, giving you a sense of the community that Sam came from. And Tolkien thought it was worth 2.5 pages. And then in 3-4 sentences, we go, not only do we go 12 years, we go 3 years with frequent visits, 9 years with no visits, and then what happens? Back to the same night. That's a very sneaky sentence. But that evening, think of all the weight that the word that is playing in that sentence. You've just zoomed through 12 years, and then with a single word that evening, you've been brought back to this previous scene. That evening, as Sam was walking home. So, Sam's walk home is suddenly synchronized with Gandalf's arrival at Frodo's house. Did somebody have a comment on the time a moment ago?
I got a tool on my writing desk in fourth grade for doing that.
You got a 2.
Yeah.
Is that a good grade or a bad
grade? That's a horrible grade. Simply because I skipped, I set up the exposition in the morning at school, and then I jumped to dinner time, because dinner time is when, the climax happened. But they're like, well, you skipped the 4 hours in the middle of the day. You're not allowed to do that.
Well,
this was traumatic.
It was. Wow. Well, that's why you come to college to find redemption. As you see, that novelists do this all the time. So, let's summarize how novelists can handle time. How they can... Ted, you look like you're about to start talking.
How do they handle time?
Not really.
What are some of the devices that novelists routinely use to handle time?
Flashbacks.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Wesley's going to have to write fast. Flashbacks and foreshadowing.
Dreams.
Dream sequences.
Can
warp.
It's like a flashback.
Some authors have 3 different stories going on, and they switch every chapter with the story, and then they eventually all come together at the end.
Tolkien will do that. And so, that's a very artificial bit of handling time, because you're supposed to suspend your awareness of one story while you catch up on the progress of a character on another story. And Tolkien does that in volume 2 and 3 of this book.
It's like a soap opera.
Yeah, I got games and flashbacks. I'll get it too.
Parallel time tracks would be a good term for that. How else do novelists handle time? Well, we've just talked about pacing.
They can change pace fast.
They change pace. They can manipulate the pacing of the story. Anything else you all want to say? It allows much more detailed control of the dimension of time. Can movies do that?
No, nor can games.
Interesting.
Definitely not. If someone made me wait 12 years for a quest to happen, they'd lose me. Not that hardcore.
What about movies? Can movies do this?
I think movies can do it, but they can do it differently. You can show, cut a scene, and then maybe someone's aged a little bit, the hair's a little gray or something along those lines.
Movies developed its own repertoire for trying to do it.
Or
exactly
can
right.
Cheesy 10 years later.
Or montages.
Montages.
Or it'll show black and white.
Grayscale, yeah.
I don't know if Wesley's getting all of this, but these are very astute comments. Cuts that show a character age, even just little banners that say 10 years later, montages, time passing, like the scene in so many movies when the hero and heroine are falling in love and you get a montage to music of them frolicking in the park and going boating and, that's a time passes scene, and it's what film has to make do with. Why do you think novels are able to control time with so much more precision and detail than film?
Because they have the use of words and an infinite number of pages at their disposal.
They have this.
Right. Movies have to keep it to 3 hours maximum.
Right, and you're longing for 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wait, what was another time device in film?
A montage you've got there. Screen text.
Black and white.
Aging of the character in successive cuts. Yes.
Movies have to keep your interest every 3 seconds, but books, the author doesn't really care about you. They just care about getting the story out. So the author can go on for pages and pages about something that you don't even care about. But in a movie, they're trying to keep you interested.
Well, books also.
No, I mean, have you read War and Peace?
Yes.
No.
And were you interested?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Hey. There's an entire lip where he reads a book for an entire chapter.
It's really interesting.
But
I read it actually.
I did too. It's like reading
a
book
inside
of a guy's eyes that you want to hear the story, not the book he's reading.
And so if you did, let's not have a discussion about whether we enjoy a passage or not, to say in War and Peace, but rather what the freedom that an author has to put something in a book and the freedom a reader has to skip it.
I'm out of page.
Got a page, get them a new
insert
page.
Page.
Yes.
I think one of the things for books that the author has an advantage is he can narrate, whereas in movies, like, you only really hear speaking.
Okay.
And, like, there's a different, I mean, there is narration, but it's a different kind. So okay. You're narrating the book, you can say, like, well, and this happened, this happened, this happened. You don't have to have each scene.
You can narrate in a movie as well.
Just novel narrate. Right. But that's very interesting. He is making a distinction. Let's get it clear in our minds what he's distinguishing between narration, where somebody tells about time passing, and drama, where you enact the passing of time. Movies can narrate through what device? What do we call it when movies have a narrator that speaks? Well, it probably is. I was thinking of voiceover. And it's recognized as a stylized device in a movie. When you hear it, you know it's artificial, and it can be effective, but it's not the usual mode. The usual mode is drama. Movies are almost all drama and very little narration. Novels can balance narration with drama in whatever proportion an author wants. And that's a huge difference. Is there narration in a game?
Cut scenes.
Yeah.
It depends on the movie scenes. I mean,
quest.
Cut scenes.
Anyone Final Fantasy fans?
Oh, yeah.
Those scenes are amazing. It's like why you play the game sometimes.
But they're very artificial interruptions in the games.
Long.
The gameplay pauses for narration. Wouldn't you say that?
It's not always like that. There are some games with interactive cutscenes, like Resident Evil 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you have a cutscene, and then, like...
Oh, yeah.
You have to, like, be paying attention. Or, yeah.
That's probably one of the things that made it such a incredible game.
So game developers are trying to find equivalent ways for some of these same effects. And it sounds like they're succeeding in that game. Yeah,
it's great. But now when you think of an MMO, like, there's not really a way to chart specific events to, like, have a cutscene at. I know Diablo did it, I think. They had, like, once you beat this certain world or something. But in a game like LOTRO, I haven't heard one, like, narrative scene yet. And I don't know if I'm going to encounter one or not.
You will during the epic quest. But you're right.
Another game, I don't know if any of you played Guild Wars before, but they had like a quest or like a cutscene before every like big instance version. But it was like an in-game version of the cutscene.
Cutscenes in game are generally you can skip most cutscenes in games because they're tailored to people who are actually interested in the plot or you know the quests or whatever. But like those games that you can interact with the cutscenes, that's just the game designers trying to keep you interested in what's going on.
Call of Duty 3 is another game where after every mission, they have the cutscene before you start the next one. And like you'll have two officers talking to each other as you start the level. And like if as you walk away, their voices will fade out. And like the audio, the way they do that, like you can hear them talking over here and turn around and they'll still be talking and doing hand gestures. They're completely, you know, computer players. They're not like people. You're the only one playing the game. So that's an interactive cutscene.
Now there's another dimension of time that I want to get on on the table for your consideration before we run out of time, which is your relationship to time as you encounter the medium. When you read, what's the relationship between a novel and your reading time?
Well, it takes you a lot less longer to read the novel than the time that goes by in the novel.
Usually.
Well, it depends.
We've got Ulysses by James Joyce, right. A massive book devoted to 24 hours.
Right.
No one can read it in 24 hours.
Right.
So sometimes, but you're on to the right concept, which is what?
Now,
well, let other people then. You're about to speak? No. Other comments about reading time in relation to novels. You control it. You control your relationship. That clock is actually 2 minutes fast. You control your time. Clearly, in a movie, you don't control the time. The movie's running. Now, if you watch it on DVD, you can stop it and start it and rewind it. You can slow it down. But the movie is made for the experience of 2 hours of linear running time, as opposed to you having some kind of complex relationship between your reading time and novel time. In games, we'll think about that next iceberg. Let me ask you one thing about the Green Dragon, where you're standing. Take your character. Have you all explored the Green Dragon?
Who's the guy creeping?
Does this seem like
a
really fun place?
No.
Well,
they have a live band, maybe.
Where the chicks?
They can.
We can make one.
Yeah,
cool.
Aren't there groups of
people
don't see go around
like
anybody have the
songs?
Volume? Volume?
You don't see very many people
in the game.
Like there drinking or having fun.
We're the only people in there right now.
Yeah.
Well, that's because it's like
any NPCs.
2 o'clock.
Why aren't there people in there?
Because it's like exactly 2:20.
That's what I said. Because it's
doesn't matter.
Because nothing's going
it's
on
not
there.
Why aren't there other human players?
Because they're drinking at 2:20.
Well, what is there for them?
What is there for them
somewhere.
To do there? Okay, let's stop today with the thought that unfortunately much of the time setting in a game is unmoored from the drama and the action. Now there's lots of exceptions, we're going to explore some of those exceptions, but often that's the case. You wanted to comment?
Yeah, pick up your wrappers, guys, off the table.
That is, clean up after yourself.
Clean up after yourself.
Check
out this area of the game a little quick.
Check out these cardboard notes.
See where the divider is right there.
Now that I'm on the board thing, do I just hit post or write a post?
Yeah, write a post and put it up there. Leslie, thank you very much. You demand?
Follow over.
Does anybody want to stay here?
That's okay.
Play.
I wish I had a mic.
My battery's dead.
Leslie, thank you for doing all that hard work.
Hope I make it a lot. Okay, I'll show you real quick. Yeah, Liv.
It's due tomorrow at 4, right?
I see.
So if you go to the other item, Liv, our blog, right? So is it last related?
No, you said that made
last supplemental material.
So who's Candy here?
Hey, look how Liv. Public folders. So just class supplemental materials. Anything that we feel that I feel is relevant.
It's me.
I'm gonna put
oh,
okay.
You
finished being a boss and the movie comes on. Like, finally. I just put my foot on the top. Turn my way
from Friday 1600.
And the zombie.
Wait, and so when do we have to have the actual paper?
So you bring it to class on Tuesday.
Do we have to turn it on Blackboard on Monday?
No.
Or did that get moved?
Yeah.
Before you get there.
Okay.
You know, so by class time Tuesday.
So we don't have to have a hard copy though.
No.
Tuesday.
We don't use paper.
Hard copy. That's arcade.
Oh man.
The only thing we use paper for is mouse pads.
Okay. We said bring to class, and I was.
bring your virtual copy to class.
These
are not
make a
word
document. I'm a fan of hard copy, so I'll do one of each.
It's always safe because you don't have battery problems with your hard copy.
That's true.
Bring your charger.
If you don't understand,
I gotta charge my paper.
Ionize it.
What's the direction?
Okay, yeah, 2 seconds shut down.
Well, that music's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love the music.
I do too.
You back? I should have the ordering soundtrack if you want to shoot.
Sure.
It's a great soundtrack.